All right, good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here. And the title of my presentation, as you mentioned, is I've shortened it for the slide because I realized it was way too long to fit on the title slide. But I'm primarily going to be talking about the literature review and the meta-analysis we did looking at residential exposure to traffic emissions. And in hindsight, I probably should have titled this, you know, residential proximity to roadways, because we really focus on that particular aspect of the distance from major roadways. I have nothing to disclose. So I just wanted to start with this slide that shows some measured patterns of traffic pollutants that are downwind and upwind of the 710 freeway in Los Angeles. And what this study shows, it shows, well, carbon monoxide, black carbon, which is a marker of diesel, and the particle number. And it shows that they spike very highly right, you know, towards the center of the roadway, and then have an exponential decline as you move in the downwind direction from the interstate in this case. And by about 300 meters, they're back to the baseline levels that we see on the upwind side. And as a result of this, the Health Effects Institute has identified an exposure zone of about 300 to 500 meters from roadways as the area that we're most highly interested in terms of exposure to traffic emissions. And it's estimated that 30 to 45% of residents of urban areas live in that exposure zone of 300 to 500 meters from a major roadway. So why do we care about traffic emissions? Because there's a growing body of evidence linking them to health effects. In 2008, Booth et al. Published a literature review specifically looking at studies that examined proximity to roadways. She identified 29 studies that were published between 1999 and 2006, of which 25 of these showed a statistically significant effect with at least one health outcome. More recently, the Health Effects Institute published a very comprehensive report in 2009 looking at traffic-related pollution more broadly than just proximity to roadways and adverse health effects, and they did a qualitative synthesis of over 170 studies. So the objectives of our work were to try to quantify the association between residential exposure to traffic emissions and various health outcomes. Our more long-term goals are then to take that information to estimate the national burden and the associated costs, and to contribute to the development of national policy recommendations related to, for example, construction of new schools, nursing homes, childcare centers in relation to their proximity to major roadways. So the methods, we did a very comprehensive search strategy and actually worked with one of the librarians at CDC to help us with this. We included four primary concepts in our search terms, and they were very broad. The first concept was traffic, and this included anything related, not just the words I'm up here, but a long list of things related to emissions, roadways, vehicles, pollution. We had the second concept was exposure, which included things like distance and density. And then we had our health and disease, which again included both of those words, as well as very specific terms like asthma, allergy, cardiovascular disease. And then we did exclude things related to traffic accidents to try to narrow it down a little bit from the beginning. We started our search from 1980, and it was conducted in May of 2009, so it captured what was published and in the databases at that time, and we limited it to English language studies. We searched 14 databases, and there's a list of some of them here. The inclusion criteria for our systematic review, we looked at just primary epidemiologic studies. We excluded reviews and editorials. We included only studies that had individual level data on, thank you, exposure and outcome. And so we excluded studies that had aggregate health outcomes and ecological studies. And we also excluded studies that specifically just looked at occupational settings. So we had a team of four people working on this, and we had two reviewers look at each citation for each round of the review. So we started with just title review, and then looking at the abstract, and then the full text. And prior to the full text review, we blinded, prior to the abstraction of the studies, we blinded them in terms of the author, the institution, and the journal. to help keep us, you know, not unbiased. So the review brought back 14,829 records, and these were put into an EndNote database, and that's what we used to manage them. But when we screened the titles, we were able to narrow that down to 699 articles, and then after reviewing the abstracts, we got down to 406 articles. At this point, we were better able to assess duplicates, because by searching the different databases, things weren't automatically picked up by EndNote as duplicates. So that brought us down to 305 articles, in which we screened the full text to see if they included the inclusion criteria, because there wasn't enough information in the abstract. And we got rid of about half, and so our total sample here is 149 articles that we abstracted. This shows those articles by the outcome of interest. Over half of them were related to respiratory health outcomes, and 22 to cancer, and so on. So the next step was abstracting information from the studies, and we created an abstraction tool and pilot tested it. It included probably 40 or 50 items, but 17 of those were specifically included to assess the quality of the study and get a quality score. We entered the information into an MS Access database, and we were also had two reviewers doing this, and so we resolved any discrepancies between them. Once all of the content and the methods of the study were abstracted, we then went back and selected an effect size that we could put into the meta-analysis. And this is where the study gets a little complicated. We did combine studies with different exposure metrics, and I'll show you examples of those on the next slide. And we specifically, whether it was a dichotomous or maybe they did quartiles or quintiles, we selected the effect size that was comparing the highest level of exposure to the lowest level of exposure. But then we looked specifically at that high level of exposure, and even though there were different metrics, we were able to feel comfortable that they all approximately equaled what it would be like the measurement of living less than 100 meters from a highway. And then we started with the cancer studies, and specifically the childhood leukemia studies, because there was only 22, and we also felt that there was more consistency in terms of study design in these studies, and it would be kind of an easy place for us to start. So for those childhood leukemia studies, there were 10, and this shows different exposure metrics. The simplest one is distance to a single road. This is what we're used to hearing. What's your proximity to a highway or a major roadway? And this is just measured in meters or feet. There's also a density on the nearest roadway, so the vehicles per day or the annual average daily traffic on a single road. And then a more comprehensive measure looks within a buffer, say a 300 or 500 meter buffer around someone's home, and it adds up the total density on all of those roads. There's also something called a distance weighted traffic density, which is the same idea as the density within the buffer, but the roads are weighted based upon their proximity. So the roadways that are further away don't count as much as the roadways that are closer to you. And we actually had one study that included a self-reported measure. So I'm going to show you the results just for those childhood leukemia studies, because that's all we've accomplished so far, which is, you know, you submit these abstracts like 8 months in advance, and we thought we'd be further along, but at least we have some results to present. The meta-analysis was done using comprehensive meta-analysis software. We used a random effects model, and this assumes that the true effect size varies between the studies. So we're not trying to find one specific study, but because we're using different populations and different study designs and different settings, the true effect size does vary, and the studies that we have represent a random sample of those studies. So those are the assumptions of a random effects model. We assessed heterogeneity. We did some subgroup analyses by study location and whether or not they had adjusted for confounders, and we also assessed publication bias. So this is what's called a forest plot of the 10 childhood leukemia studies, and what you see are the odds ratio and the lower and upper bound of the 95% confidence interval for each of the 10 studies, and those are plotted as well. The size of the square of the plot, it reflects the relative weight that that study received in the analysis, which is partly dependent upon the sample size. And then at the bottom, you see the summary effect size, which is shown in the pink diamond. So the odds ratio was 1.5 and the confidence interval of 1.1 to 2.1. When we looked at heterogeneity statistics, we found that the Q value was statistically significant, showing that we have a heterogeneous distribution within the 10 studies. And there's a statistic called I-square, which told us that 63% of the observed variance is real and can possibly be explained by one or more factors. So then we did the subgroup analysis to see if we can explain some of this heterogeneity. The first analysis we did was grouping by whether they adjusted or did not. So three studies only provided us with crude odds ratios. And seven studies adjusted for age and sex, and some of them adjusted for race in addition to that. So what we see is the crude studies have a much larger effect size of 2.7. And when we look at the seven studies that were adjusted, the summary effect size is only 1.2 and is no longer statistically significant. We also did by study location. Four of the studies were conducted in Europe and 10 in the United States. And here we see not a lot of differences, 1.4 versus 1.7. This is called a funnel plot, and it assessed publication bias. The x-axis is the log odds ratio, and the y-axis is the standard error. So the larger studies are shown at the top of the figure. And what you're looking for is sort of an equal balance around the horizontal line, which is the summary effect size. So at the top of the graph with the larger studies, we see that there's pretty much some symmetry between the dots. But when we look at the bottom of the graph with the smaller studies, we don't see that symmetry at all. We only see small studies that had large effect sizes were published. And this suggests that there is some publication bias, that small studies that didn't show an effect or perhaps showed a negative effect were not published. And so as a result of this, this indicates that we might be overestimating the effect size. So in summary, the summary effect size suggested that residential exposure to traffic emissions is positively associated with childhood leukemia. However, the effect size was weaker and not significant when we limited it to the studies that had adjusted odds ratios. The statistics I didn't show, but even within those subgroup analyses, there is still heterogeneity that needs to be explained. And we did see evidence of publication bias, again indicating that the effect size might be overestimated. So just a little discussion on these 10 studies. First, one of the strengths is that there was consistency in the outcome measurement as well as in the study design and the effect size type. All 10 of these studies were case control studies that had odds ratios, and so that made them easy to combine on that front. However, there was a lot of variability in the exposure metrics, as I showed you, both in terms of the type of measurement, whether they used a single road or a cumulative measure. And there's also differences in between the U.S. and European, particularly when we look at what the mix of pollutants may be, because there are differences in fuel types, the density of roads on the car, as well as the density of people who live near roadways, and differences in the fleet composition as well. Another limitation is that none of the studies that we looked at were able to adequately control for socioeconomic status and other potential confounders. One example is noise, which is talked about in the literature, maybe somewhat controversial. So our next steps are to explore other sources of heterogeneity, to abstract and analyze the other 130 studies that we haven't got to yet. We do plan to update the literature review through at least 2010, since we'll be continuing to work on this, I'm sure, for at least another year. And then also to try to search that gray literature to address that issue of publication bias and reach out to some of the authors and folks on the papers to see if we can't find some unpublished studies that might add to this as well. And I'd like to acknowledge the following people: Vicki Booth, Arthur Wendell, and Fu-Yan Yip are the other scientists at CDC that have been working with me on this, and then some other folks that have been providing technical assistance. Thank you. Well, we just use the definition that were provided in each of the individual studies, and I assume that they're using the Department of Transportation's definition of whether something is a highway or a major arterial or some other roadway. So usually the studies provided a definition. We did try, when we were trying to do some comparisons across the different exposure metrics, to come up with a number, like a vehicles per day on a highway, and it varies so much across the United States. You know, we used, I think, 60 or 90,000, but I mean, there are roadways in New York and LA that have hundreds of thousands of cars per day, so.
Any questions or comments?
Andy? Well, I have not done that. He asked how large of a study we would need to give a definitive answer on this. Well, I can tell you, I don't know the answer to that, but the study, the sample sizes and the studies that we included, the largest ones had around 5,000 participants. I think there were two studies that were that large. And then the smaller studies probably had around 500 on average. There might have been a couple that were smaller than that. So there's fairly large studies. Yes?
Could you say something more about the hunt owners and listed specifically noise?
Yeah, I'm not as well read on the noise literature as I should be, but even in doing our search, we ran across several studies that address noise as the exposure of interest. There are studies showing that the noise factor, you know, can lead to stress and other health outcomes, but my understanding is that it's really hard to tease those apart. Like, how do you separate the noise factor from the pollution factor? And I think they're just very correlated exposures and difficult to sort of tease apart. So I was a little hesitant to even include that in there, but it's something that we're thinking about, and we'll definitely, you know, try to have that as an explanation when we write up the findings.
Thank you.
Thanks.